quick announcement. Linguistics Career Launch 2024 is happening this summer. It will be a two-week event taking place online from July 15th through July 26th, 2024. This is a boot camp that takes linguists in training and in transition from coursework to career through panels, courses, guest speakers, and networking events. Check out our website at linguisticscareerlaunch.com for more information, and then join us July 15th to the 26th, 2024, to access the career management methods you need to research and apply to jobs that use linguistics in business, government, nonprofit, and tech. Jackson Kuzmic was born and raised in Hong Kong and received his Master's in Applied Linguistics from the University of Cambridge in England. Alongside various research positions, he has worked in outreach for an environmental research center, as a product management intern at a language tech startup, and as the head mentor for his undergraduate department. He is currently working in the clean tech climate space at Carbon Limiting Technologies, a specialist consultancy for scaling climate innovations in the UK. Topics discussed include working abroad, job search, analyst, consulting, data research, environmentalism, green tech, and clean tech. The link to Jackson's LinkedIn profile is in the show notes. So, Jackson, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me on the podcast today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Really excited.
I think people will be really interested in your career path, both because of your background, but also because you work in an industry that you're the first linguist I've heard of who works in clean tech. So I am really eager to know how you got where you are and why you wanted to do this. So let's go back and start and talk a little bit about where you grew up and then what got you interested in linguistics.
Yeah, absolutely. And the story kind of goes hand in hand. I grew up in Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. I was born there. My parents lived in Hong Kong and China for almost 30 years.
Wow. And
I lived in Hong Kong until I was 14. And then we moved to California, to Lake Tahoe. Mm-hmm. And that's where I spent high school before going to Los Angeles, or near Los Angeles, to study linguistics at Pomona College.
Mm. Did you grow up multilingual?
So I grew up being taught Chinese, being taught Mandarin. Mm-hmm. And you know, from a sociolinguistics perspective, I kind of wish I got to learn Cantonese in Hong Kong. But they taught us Mandarin, and I loved it growing up. My dad is completely fluent. His Mandarin's great. Uh-huh. And I was never fluent, but it got pretty good.
Cool. So how did you find out about linguistics? You know, was it offered to you as a subject matter, or did you come to it like a lot of people come to it kind of sideways through sociology or anthropology or second language learning?
So it was kind of random, actually. Pomona College is a liberal arts college, so mm-hmm. you're encouraged to take all sorts of classes. And you don't actually choose your major until the end of your second year. Mm-hmm. And kind of in just the broad range of classes that I was taking, I decided to take an intro to linguistics class. Mm-hmm. I'd heard good things, didn't really know what it was. I mean, I knew what, you know, Chinese class was like, but I didn't know what studying language was like. And I completely fell in love with it. Mm-hmm. I kind of loved the kind of theoretical side and sort of puzzle solving that's involved with going through language data and figuring out how it works, and you're almost like tinkering with it. And I really enjoyed that. I enjoyed the works that I got to read, and I just immediately ended up signing up for like three more classes the next semester. Mm-hmm. And it never even felt like a very conscious decision, but but I was just, you know, completely immersed.
Sure.
And I couldn't get enough. Yeah.
You were compelled to study linguistics.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think that's unusual, actually. So many people, and I include myself in this, once you discover what linguistics is, everything else seems super boring in comparison. You know, yeah. I started out as an English major, and then once I took some classes that were linguistically oriented, I was like, oh man, this is the best. Those English classes are nothing. This is great. This is what I want to do.
Yeah, 100%. I felt that completely. And, you know, it's funny. In high school, I did really well in English classes, but I really liked math classes where I didn't do so well. And I don't know, it linguistics kind of felt like it sort of married the two together. Like I kind of got to have the humanities side, but there's also something very scientific about it.
Totally agree.
It clicked in every way for me.
Yeah. I have spoken to so many people who have both interests in sociolinguistics, which we would consider maybe a little softer, you know, like not quite so scientifically oriented, although there's a ton of science in there, but also interested in like phonetics, which is extremely scientific, you know, measuring things and using software and calculations and statistics. And I love that linguistics has both of those things in it. It allows you to really explore both parts of your brain, right? The softer side and the harder side.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you took this linguistics class, you know, you had your road to Damascus moment. What happened after that?
So, yeah, I got super immersed in the department. I got a job in the department doing admin stuff, which then turned into kind of a TA role. There was only undergrads at Pomona, so we got to be TAs, which was really, really cool. I did a semester in Dublin, and I took I got to take some Irish language literature classes and some classes on, you know, endangered languages from the Irish perspective. And I basically got to the end of my undergrad career, which was sort of derailed by COVID. My senior year was fully online. I was actually in Dublin when COVID happened. Which was a dramatic thing to go through. And I, you know, I wasn't really sure where I was at with career. I knew I loved linguistics. And I ended up applying to a master's degree in the UK at the University of Cambridge. It was kind of a way for me to see if linguistics research was something I wanted to go into. My, you know, advisors at Pomona were very realistic with me about the challenges of going into academia in linguistics. And I loved it. I absolutely loved it. But I decided that academia wasn't really for me, and I pivoted away into where I am now.
I'm really curious. You said you knew you didn't want to go into academia. What sort of influences, or like, how did you come to that decision? What things factored into it?
You know, there was a lot of things kind of going on. I was getting more drawn to a traditional career, and that could go back to maybe the environment that I grew up in. You know, the Hong Kong community is very, you know, career driven. And then also, you know, seeing some of the challenges that people I knew were having in academia, I just didn't know if it would fit with me so well. I think I was getting a little bit burnt out by school, wanting to do something else. And I always thought, you know, if it really felt wrong, I could go back to it, but I at least need to give the career thing a try and see how that goes.
Interesting. Okay. That's really cool. I think that feeling that you had is becoming more common for a lot of people. The break with academia was a much more dramatic sort of thing because lots of people think they're going to be in academia and then they find out for reasons that they're not going to. So it becomes more of an identity thing, right? Like,
yeah,
you have to leave part of you behind, but it sounds like that wasn't the case for you, which is awesome. It shouldn't be that way. Like, you know, you should feel free to pursue your career where you want to.
Yeah. And, you know, it was nice. I had a professor at Pomona, Professor Melnick, Robin mm-hmm. Melnick, and he was working in industry until kind of later in his career, and then he went back and got a PhD and started teaching at Pomona, and that story clearly stuck with me. So I always kind of thought I could make it happen if I wanted to.
Oh, that's awesome! Wow, what an incredible role model! How wonderful! Yeah,
absolutely.
Okay, so you finished up your master's, and then you were able to come back here, right? Like, they weren't going to keep you in England forever.
So no, I'm in London at the moment.
Oh, you're still there? Okay, so you never came back. Okay.
I never came back. That was actually another thing that influenced it is the UK, and this is like a post-Brexit situation that they've got, is they now give you a visa to stay in the UK for 2 years if you get a degree there.
Wow.
And
okay.
I fell in love with London, which is just an hour train ride away from Cambridge. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, when am I going to have this opportunity again? So decided to, and in fact, this is a big part of my job search was, I didn't really know how to narrow it. It just all felt really overwhelming. And so the one decision that I made was, okay, I'm only going to look in London. Mm-hmm, And that was kind of how I focused things a little bit.
So when you were doing your job search, what sort of jobs were you looking for? Like, you'd had some experience teaching, you'd had some experience in admin. Like, what kind of parameters were you putting on it besides the location part of it?
Yeah, so I was keeping it intentionally broad, and I, you know, was noticing lots of companies have their starting role listed as analyst or sometimes associate. So that was one kind of observation that I had. And then the other thing was I was interested in consulting as a career. You know, it's a very popular one from Pomona, and there are some clear parallels. The you know, you're solving business problems, and that looks like a lot of data gathering and parsing data and kind of finding patterns within it and coming to some conclusion, some analysis. So I had that in my mind as well, but I thought I wouldn't really mesh so well with kind of the sort of traditional consulting routes. And I was looking at some kind of environmental side to things. There's ESG is a big thing in consulting and in business at the moment. And I was looking at that. And I kind of just came across the company that I work for now, Carbon Limiting Technologies, which is a consultancy, but only focuses on the green tech side of things. But I guess to answer your question, I was just trying to find interesting roles. And one of the first things that I did was just filter by analyst was kind of an easy way to find the entry level positions.
Right. As everybody knows, unless you are very specialized, searching for linguist as a job title is not going to help you.
Yes. Yeah. I didn't even try.
Yeah, very smart. So is environmentalism something that is really important to you, like out of many choices, or is it sort of top of the list?
Yeah, so it was top of the list for me. I going to high school in Lake Tahoe really kind of kickstarted that. It's a very fragile ecosystem there. And there was some initiatives during high school that I got to be involved with a little bit, and some things that our teachers made us aware of. And then when I was at Pomona, I actually got to spend a summer working for the Tahoe Environmental Research Center, which is kind of a branch of UC Davis in Lake Tahoe. And I was doing kind of education and outreach there. So it could be like leading kids on field trips, but also doing some grant writing and just helping out. And it just felt really, really valuable. And so, yeah, that really was at the top of my list. If I could do something in sustainability or climate, which I now know to be absolutely massive buckets, that would be really fulfilling for me.
That's great. It's wonderful that you were able to find a position that really worked with your ethos and what you wanted. So you found a job listing. Can you talk about what that process was like, actually, you know, submitting a resume and interviewing and the rest of it? I think what is important for people listening to hear is, how did you take your linguistic background and this other stuff that you were just talking about, which was extremely relevant, and turn it into something appealing for this company?
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess one thing that I also noticed, and maybe some advice that I would give to my former self, one reason I think this job worked out so well for me is because it's a smaller company. Mm-hmm. It's not like a large multinational organization. And so the application immediately went to kind of a decision maker in the company. And they knew what linguistics was, which was a big part of it. Yep.
Unusual.
So shout out to Natalie, our COO, for that. And essentially it was kind of very lucky that they were just looking for kind of someone who was engaged and willing to do the work. And so I had to submit, it wasn't a cover letter, but it was like 4 to 5 sentences, which I had to email directly to Natalie, and a resume as well. Mm-hmm. And I found the listing on Handshake. It was one of the university job portals. So Pomona and Cambridge had it. And I saw it on LinkedIn as well, actually. Mm-hmm. And basically I just sent that out. I didn't do any networking. I didn't know people from the company beforehand, and got a response for an interview. And the interview, the very first question was, and I guess the only question was, what makes you think that linguistics is a relevant subject for this position? Which was pretty daunting. So it was really about 40 minutes of selling linguistics.
Wow.
Which, yeah.
Well, you obviously did an excellent job. They hired you.
Yeah, it was daunting. I think I was asked to explain my dissertation and what it was, which was a good exercise. And luckily, honestly, it was the linguistics career launch really hammered home the kind of translation that you have to do from linguistics to job skills. Mm-hmm. So I had already heard and thought of a bit of an answer to why is linguistics relevant, the kind of analytical side to it.
That's really good to hear. Helpful. Yeah, I was going to say that you went in prepared. What it sounds to me like is you went in very prepared to this interview, even though you had no idea what they were going to ask you. And then the first thing they ask you is like the hardest thing to answer. But you'd done some work just to understand how to present your experience in a way that was going to be meaningful to them. So even though you didn't know the question, you were prepared for any question that was around that.
Yeah. And it was... It was definitely something that I was hearing from, you know, trying to get advice and feedback from other people who were working in careers that I was interested in, mm-hmm. was was that linguistics, you know, isn't well known for what we're actually doing day to day. And I mean, we hear that all the time. It was a big theme at LCL and everything. Mm-hmm. I was lucky that I was thinking about it, and then ended up being kind of the only thing that we talked about.
Amazing.
And interestingly, the only job offers that I got were from companies who actually asked about linguistics and what it was. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, maybe there's something to that.
Yeah. So just to go back a little bit, the company where you ended up working was one of several that you applied to, is that correct?
Yeah. I applied to quite a few over about a 2 or 3 month stretch. Mm-hmm. And almost all of them were in consulting in some form or another. Mm-hmm. You know, felt all the pains that people feel when you send applications off into the ethos. And
right. This might be a good time to talk a little bit about that word consulting, because it occurs to me that, I mean, my job has been consulting, but it's really different from what you do. And I think for people who are getting out there into industry, you know, consulting is this huge category that generally means you're not a full-time employee of some large company. Like, you're not a full-time employee of, I don't know, Cisco or Pepsi or Amazon or something like that. You work for a company that is then employed by those big companies to do very specific work. And you can consult on all kinds of work, right? It can be what you do, Jackson, like doing data research and gathering information. It can be what I've done, which is marketing stuff, like developing content and names and brands. But consulting just covers a whole giant range of services, and it's always through a middleman, basically. You know, the company that you work for then contracts with other companies. So it's a very non-specific job title, and pretty much I think anybody can call themselves a consultant if they provide very specific sort of resources and skills to a bigger company.
Yeah, absolutely. It is a huge bucket. And, you know, consulting was on my radar at Pomona, but I don't think I totally internalized what that meant. You know, you've got the big firms, and they just kind of seem like these very intimidating kind of monoliths. But starting at CLT, where I'm at, it kind of made me realize exactly how that works. Consultants sort of have a particular set of problems that they want to solve, mm-hmm. or range that they want to solve them in.
That's a really good way to think of it, actually, is like a consultant is a problem solver, right? Like, that's your job, is someone gives you a problem and then you have to come up with the answer to it. And it can be problems that are very wide ranging. It's not always the same kind of problem. And people employ consultants, I think, because they bring a different perspective. You know, it's an external perspective, right? That's what you guys do. You don't work within the industry. You are an entity that is somewhat outside of it. And so I think that's the valuable part of consultancy, is that you have a more objective view of whatever the problem happens to be, and then you can find better solutions.
Yeah. And there are, it's one thing that's truly shocking to me is even in our niche, which is kind of green technologies, sort of emerging low carbon technologies, there are still, you know, so many things that need solving. Every project mm-hmm. that comes through the door, I'm like, I didn't even know this was something that anyone would need or something that could be asked to be done. Mm-hmm. And yeah, maybe it would be a little helpful to sort of talk about the work a little bit.
Yeah, please.
That looks like. So yeah, essentially we are problem solvers, consultants for anyone who has a kind of vested interest in taking new climate technologies, so startups, and making them grow. Making them grow and making their products more widespread, and therefore the kind of benefits of their products more available. And that can look like the government wants to grow new low carbon technologies, or large corporations might want to invest in new technologies or buy new technologies. And so there's all kinds of problems and questions that can arise out of that. And clean tech is also a kind of funny word that I hadn't heard of before starting the job. Mm-hmm. And essentially, it just means any technology that, when scaled up, when it is grown, when the company becomes bigger, the technology will reduce carbon emissions compared to what we are already doing. Mm-hmm. So an example of a project that I'm working on that I'm really excited about is our client is the UK government, and they want to design something called an advanced market commitment for low carbon cement. And that all sounds a bit wild, but essentially cement is really bad for the environment. Producing it is horrible for the world. It's about 10% of global CO2 emissions comes just from making cement. So there are all these innovations that are seeking to change how we make cement to do it in a more mm-hmm. environmentally friendly way. The UK government has this idea to build something called an advanced market commitment, which it means that we get these large cement manufacturers and buyers of cement to say, okay, if this new innovation reaches certain benchmarks, you know, if it performs well enough, if it's cheap enough, we will automatically buy it. You know, we'll sign something that triggers a purchase of this new technology, which is exactly what we did with COVID vaccines, actually. It's mm-hmm. the exact same process. Then our company has to help design it and help do the emails and get the different groups of manufacturers and the startups all in the same room to talk about it and try and come up with, well, how do we actually make this happen? So that's kind of an example of a project that we're working on, which is so out of left field compared to linguistics. It's unbelievable.
So what do you specifically do that as a linguist in this whole process?
Yeah, so I get to, one part that I got to work on was just combing through the internet and through reports and looking for the startups in the space that are working on low carbon cement and trying to classify them and come up with a way of categorizing them and thinking about how they fit in with kind of existing ways of making cement and concrete. Mm-hmm. And so I, you know, opened up Excel and I have, you know, lines of every startup I could find that makes low carbon cement and descriptions of what they do and how much funding they've raised from, you know, investors and grant programs and trying to see what narratives emerge, what types of solutions are mm-hmm. being successful, you know, what companies are doing better or worse and why. Why is that happening? Mm-hmm. What are the barriers to these different technologies from growing? And so it really tickles the same part of your brain as if you had a bunch of, you know, phenology data and you're trying to say, you know, why does this consonant become dental in this instance? And it's from all the context around it. And, you know, it might seem kind of abstract, but it feels kind of similar the way that you're mm-hmm. coming to those conclusions.
It sounds, I mean, many other people's consulting jobs are like this too. It's doing deep dives of research and becoming an expert in whatever the thing is that you are immersing yourself in for some period of time. And linguists are great at that, right? I think linguists are amazing at data gathering and data analysis and making connections maybe that other people wouldn't see, and creating taxonomies if that's something that's necessary. From my experience, people who haven't studied linguistics can do that kind of work, but I don't think they're as good at it, because doing taxonomies and this kind of data classification that you're talking about is sort of second nature, right? Like you have to do it in everything that you do in linguistics.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it really, I think it fits really well. I think every single linguist I've ever met, if you told them to go look at, you know, low carbon concrete startups and figure out what's the story, what's going on, mm-hmm. how do you classify them? I think every linguist I've met would come away with, you know, a really good take on that.
So what is your, to use business speak, what is your deliverable to your clients, and how do you work on that?
Yeah, well, it depends. It depends on the project, but generally speaking, it will look on like a large slide deck, mm-hmm. PowerPoints, which outline the problem, the approach, and our findings, and then crucially our recommendations. That's mm-hmm. the kind of the next step of thinking is, okay, how can we make your business or organization better from what we've researched? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it is a lot of building PowerPoints, which is something that you get pretty quick at quite quickly. And then in some instances I've gotten the chance to, the real deliverable is presenting it to the client. Mm-hmm. And I've gotten to present a couple of things, which is really great. Sometimes deliverables can look like hosting workshops with the clients as well, mm-hmm. where we'll present a series of options and we'll kind of work through and brainstorm how each one impacts their business.
I was going to ask you about the presenting. I have found for me, and I've heard this from other people as well, that a lot of that kind of work is very similar to teaching, because you're up in front of a group of people. You have to keep their attention. You have to present the information in a way that they will accept. And sometimes that means kind of changing your tone or your way of presentation on the fly, depending on what's going on in the room with you, and also kind of keeping order, which is a thing that I've had to do in meetings sometimes when fully grown adults who should know better were not behaving properly in meetings. And you really, you know, you have to get them to pay attention to what's going on and put their phones away.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've kind of got to, it's the same with teaching. You've kind of got to think on the fly if you're, you know, if your lesson or your presentation is going in one way, mm-hmm. and you can see engagement lacking, or you can see that they picked up on one thing in specific that was interesting, you kind of have to adapt quickly and you know, shift focus to different things, and sometimes what the audience is going to get out of a presentation emerges mm-hmm. as you're giving it.
Right.
And I think that, you know, a good teacher and a good presenter are one and the same. It's the same skills. So yeah, it's absolutely a parallel.
Where you work, you're on a team, correct?
Yeah.
And can you talk a little bit about the working on a team thing? This is something that's come up with a couple people that I've talked to, just about the importance of learning to work on a team, which is not something that you're really taught in graduate school. In fact, a lot of it is working on your own. You know, you don't get team projects. So was that something that you felt comfortable with right away, or were there things you learned about working on a team?
It's definitely a learning experience, and it's a really good one. As you said, in graduate school, you're very alone, you know, and for the most part. And at first, working on a team, I was worried, you know, the kind of dread, I think everybody's been on a bad group project at university. And in a sense, it kind of seemed like this might just be group projects every day. Mm-hmm. And it kind of, is, but there's something really nice about, you know, everybody having the exact same goals, makes it all go really well. And you have to give, you know, how you treat your team and how you work together so much attention, but it's really rewarding. And at least where I am, it's kind of a very much, we're all in this together sort of thing. You know, mm-hmm. if somebody's, you know, getting up to leave while someone else has a lot of work, well, that just doesn't really happen. Everyone's kind of helping out, mm-hmm. Helping each other. Absolutely a learning curve. And we have a team meeting every day at 9 o'clock to just mm-hmm. kind of check in and see how everything's going, what we're all up to, what we might need from one another. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's a very collaborative environment.
Are you the only linguist there?
I am. Yeah. I'm the only linguist. And actually, I think I'm the only non-engineer.
Oh, wow.
on the team, which is funny. Everyone else has an engineering background.
Did you have to learn like a new sociolect to talk to the engineers?
Yes. Yeah, I did. I did. Absolutely. And especially where I'm at, you know, day one, someone says kilowatts and you're like, well, or kilowatt hours. And, you know, I don't even really know what that is. but you learn quickly. And I think it's nice. It's nice having a bit of a different perspective on things as well. Mm-hmm. But I definitely need to lean on people when I'm looking at some technology and I don't fully understand how it works. Mm-hmm.
Do you get the feeling? Sorry, let me step back for a second. There are obviously other firms that do this. Do you feel like other firms are open to employing linguists for the kind of work that you do? Like, do you have any sense of that?
I would say absolutely. Yeah, I think so. I think there is kind of a shift to, because I see people in similar roles at other companies that have, you know, history backgrounds or sociology mm-hmm, backgrounds, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. English backgrounds. Like it's definitely common. And, you know, I see a lot about this kind of sort of generalist approach to kind of life and career. And it was a big part of Pomona education as well, was focus on sort of the liberal arts and rounding yourself out and being, you know, a good thinker and someone who produces good work, and people will value that in all kinds of ways. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, interesting. I am wondering if it's the same situation here in the US. And I would assume that it is. It's just an area that I never specifically thought of that would be good for linguists, because there are a lot of fairly obvious ones. But it seems like with the situation in the world and global climate change, it would be a place that would have more places of employment and therefore needing more people to fill the kind of role that you do.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's becoming more and more of a problem. And there are more pathways to the solution, and therefore more jobs. You know, that there definitely is going to be a continuous rise in jobs in kind of climate broadly. And there are so many different jobs in climate or sustainability. Mm-hmm. I, on paper, someone whose job title is sustainability consultant and me might sound the same, but they're doing completely different work as well. And there's just there really is lots out there, but it's really hard to find. And there's absolutely an element of luck in kind of everyone who gets
sure
kind of to any position, but yeah, especially here.
But the advantage is that now they have you and they see how great you are. They would be more likely to hire another linguist if they have a position that's similar to yours. And also because you're already inside, you can evangelize for hiring other linguists.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, one area that I think I see that really being the case is when COVID happened, I was interviewing for an internship with a brand management consultancy in Los Angeles. And it was someone that a professor of mine kind of referred us to. And the interview with them, I immediately opened to kind of talk about linguistics and why it's relevant. And they sort of stopped me and they're like, you don't have to tell us that. We've hired plenty of linguists. We think linguists are amazing workers.
Cool.
And for what it's worth, I feel like I've seen quite a lot of linguists in brand, working in brand.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's how that happened is, you know, you hire one and you see how relevant it is. And yeah, I would absolutely, if I was ever hiring, I would hire a linguist in a heartbeat.
That's great. I'm just thinking about this so much now, cause I never thought about it before, but now it's like, ooh, opportunities. So where do you see your career going? You've been employed for a while at this company. Is this what you want to keep doing or do you have other ideas? Would you go back to academia like your mentor did eventually?
You know, I would never say never with academia, but at the moment, my only focus is really on kind of staying in the clean tech space. Makes me feel really fulfilled. And for career, we'll see. There's a few options that I'm thinking of, and you know, consulting is something that I think comes well to me. I do. I like the kind of way of working, but I think I would only want to stay with it in a way that was, you know, fulfilling to me. Mm-hmm. And clean tech is certainly a way that comes about.
Are you going to come back to the U.S. or are you going to stay over there?
That's a great question. That's a great question. I'm not sure so far. I love London. I have no like plans to leave London. I have a partner out here, and the city is pretty incredible, and I like, you know, I like being in a place where I'm not kind of car bound.
Yeah.
It's kind of a big deal for me. And
so just to be clear, so as long as you're employed with your current employer, you can stay, right? Like there's no time limit where they're going to kick you out.
So I'm going through a visa process now. I'm coming to the end of the 2 years, the kind of graduate visa that I got, and my company has offered to continue sponsoring me. So I'm just switching visas from the graduate visa to a worker visa
right
at the moment. And the visa thing it's definitely tricky, but worth it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a job, right? To get a visa. In addition to your day job, you have this other job, which is filling out the paperwork and jumping through hoops and things.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm really lucky with how much I know the company has had to do. And it's definitely, it's not fun. But from what I can hear, you know, the UK is a friendlier place than many about it. So.
Yeah. Well, we've definitely heard that from folks who are from outside the United States who come here to the U.S. for work and have to jump through all the hoops on work visas. And it just varies wildly depending on where you're from and what kind of industry you're in. And then they keep changing the laws about, you know, who can have a visa and how long you can stay. It just adds this layer of complexity on top of, like I was just saying, like, you know, you have your day job and then you have your job of making sure that you are legally able to stay in the place where you want to stay.
Yeah. And I've been, you know, I've looked at it for thinking about my partner and if she could come to the U.S. because she's not an American citizen, and the requirements for it and how to make it happen. And it just seems unbelievable. It's so inaccessible.
The easiest way to do it is actually, the easiest way is just to get married to someone, frankly, you know, even if like you don't really want to be married, just like do that. And then you can stay and figure the rest of it out later.
It's by far the easiest way.
Cool. Well, I think I've gone through all of the things that I wanted to ask you about. Is there anything we haven't talked about that you want to get in there, or any parting pieces of advice to the folks who are listening?
I would say for final pieces of advice, well, I feel like this will resonate with other linguists, is that I was very intimidated by getting jobs, by the sort of corporate and commercial world. Academia felt like home to me, you know, university still does feel like home to me in a lot of ways, and the job world can feel very intimidating, and it's hard to even kind of dip out of some of the jargony stuff that you get involved in when you're and some of that feels really intimidating and inaccessible. And so one piece of advice that I think I mentioned it briefly, but there's a lot of really interesting small companies out there who are doing really incredible stuff. And I think linguists connect with people really, really well. And it's easier to do that at a small company. You know, big companies, there's a lot of luck involved trying to send a resume out on the internet on some portal to no one in particular, or going through recruiters is kind of, it feels a bit impersonal to me. So I think one piece of advice, if you're stuck, is to look for the small companies and reaching out to them directly about positions and opportunities is something that would be welcome and shouldn't be scary, whereas the big companies can feel intimidating. So I'd say if you haven't tried applying to small companies, look out for them.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. It definitely requires a little more legwork on your part when you're looking, because of the way the algorithm works, right? Like, even if you're looking on LinkedIn, the big companies come up first, and then you have to get past like pages 1 and 2 of the search results to find what might be actually a much better fit for you.
Yeah, 100%. And it is tough, especially, you know, small companies don't have the same kind of infrastructure behind them for putting out job applications and whatnot. And it is a bit more work, but I think finding 5 small companies and applying to them will be just as useful as kind of shotgunning out 100 applications.
Yeah. So. Yeah. That's great. That's really super. I think that's exactly the kind of advice that people need, actionable and specific.
Good. Well, I hope it helps. And yeah, finding small companies, you can do it in all kinds of random ways. That might be startups, but and you can Google, you know, top 30 startups in San Francisco or wherever, or top 30 startups that do this and that. And we're just looking at, the fifth page of the job sites.
Exactly. Yeah.
And they're out there. They are.
Awesome. That is great. Well, Jackson, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today. Is it okay if I put your LinkedIn link on the show notes in case people would like to contact you?
Yeah, absolutely. Always. It would be great.
Cool. And maybe you'll have time to come to one of the next LCL mixers, because I'm sure people would love to hang out with you.
I would love that. I miss talking to linguists.
So much.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Linguistics Career Launch 2021 was a one-month intensive program intended to familiarize linguistics students and faculty with career options beyond academia in business, tech, government, and nonprofit organizations. Videos of all our recorded sessions are available on our YouTube channel. LCL 2021 was organized by Nancy Frischberg, Alexander Johnston, Emily Pace, Susan Steele, and Laurel Sutton. You can get in touch at linguisticscareerlaunch@gmail.com.